I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. There's a lot of money being made by the so-called wellness industry, touting supplements and diets, skincare, mindfulness, getaway weekends, mostly aimed at women. Now, who could be opposed to learning to take better care of ourselves? Our guest, journalist Rena Rafael, says companies and promoters are selling expensive, often unproven, and sometimes dangerous products, offering less stress, more control, greater happiness, even the possibility of perfection. We're talking about therapeutic crystals and coffee enemas and charcoal toothpaste, detox drinks, jade vagina eggs, colloidal silver sprays. It's a long list. Rafael's new book is The Gospel of Wellness, Gyms, Gurus, Goop, and the False Promise of Self-Care. She writes that companies play on and prey on women's fears and anxieties by making dubious, unscientific claims about their products and promoting self-care through consumption. Here's Gwyneth Paltrow, founder of the lifestyle company Goop, on the Dr. Oz Show. This is back in 2018, sharing her health tips.
And we're back with Gwyneth Paltrow. She's revealing her all-natural tricks to revitalizing your body from the inside out. She always seems to be in the know about the latest health trends and alternative remedies. How do you keep up with this stuff? I read what you're doing, and that's how I get ideas sometimes.
I read a lot as well. I do a lot of research, and I'm fortunate, and I get to meet really interesting people like you and ask questions, and so that's basically it.
Well, Rena Rafael, thanks for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
You know, I remember when the word wellness became part of our vocabulary, a kind of nebulous word that seemed to mean a lot of things to a lot of different people. How do you use the word wellness? How do you see that word?
I would say at its most basic level, it's the active pursuit of well-being outside the realm of medicine. So it's more than just avoiding sickness, it's prevention and maintenance, so nutrition, fitness, sleep, stress management. It's all the choices we make to feel better physically and mentally. However, there is no agreed-upon definition of what quote-unquote well is, because it's so highly individual, right? What makes me feel good might not work for you. That's one reason why the industry has grown so big. And so wellness, unfortunately, has somewhat devolved into this ambiguous marketing term that can just as easily mean meditation as it does, I don't know, activated charcoal toothpaste. Wellness can mean almost anything. And when something can mean anything, it starts to mean nothing.
Is it? And this is an industry that has grown up. I think it's valued at more than $4 trillion today, so clearly making a lot of money. Is there a time when we can say, well, this is when we began to see the wellness industry, underscoring that word industry, begin to take shape?
You know, it's really hard when we talk about the wellness industry because we're really talking about over a dozen subsectors, right? We're talking about fitness, nutrition, sleep. It really kind of runs the gamut. And a lot of these trends and ideas have roots that go decades, even a century back. So some of this isn't new. But I would say in the last decade, what we consider wellness or what this industry was really started changing. And the messaging started becoming filled with consumption, individualistic productivity pressures, self-optimization. More and more over the last decade, it became about buying something specific or working very hard on our health, almost to the point of fetishizing our health. And so, of course, I'm not against movement, eating your fruits and vegetables, real wellness. It's just what has happened to this industry where women might be buying or doing things that aren't really helping them, but maybe making them even more stressed out at times.
Well, what's interesting is that you, in a sense, fell prey to some of this messaging. What was it about what was being, I guess, sold to you that seemed so compelling at the time?
You know, I think I felt like a lot of American women where it just felt harder and harder to feel good. It felt like modern life was becoming more and more chaotic. So much felt out of control, the news, the political divide. I was working so hard, I was always tired. And here came an industry that promised solutions for sleep, for being stressed out. Anything you had an issue with, they offered you supplements, gummies, a program, a protocol, a special diet. And that's really enticing. I think also if you're really stressed out, you really just don't think through what you're being sold. Like, you don't have time to do that. So you kind of fall prey to the quick, easy solution, because the real answer might be a lot more complicated, or might involve behavioral change, or might even involve systemic solutions, actually asking, well, why are Americans so stressed? What is going on in our lives? And maybe I can't buy my way out of it.
I want to get to all those big questions, but I'm also curious about, you know, when you were, in a sense, buying into the wellness industry, what did you do? What did you buy?
Oh, gosh, I spent so much money. I spent hundreds of dollars a month. I only bought organic. I only bought clean beauty products, non-toxic cleaners. I belonged to three different boutique gyms. I had a Fitbit. I mean, almost all of my hobbies and activities surrounded around the pursuit of health. And I will say that I really love some of these classes, and I did love some of these products. But over the years, I started noticing that I was becoming almost paranoid. My Fitbit wasn't helping me work out as much as making me feel really guilty if I didn't get enough steps or I didn't work out that day. I became terrified of shower gels in hotel rooms. And so I kind of had an awakening on a personal level of saying, well, how much am I getting out of this? Is it really helping me? And on a professional point of view, I was a wellness industry journalist. So I started asking more questions of, well, how much scientific evidence is there for some of these things?
And you say that in many ways, the message from this industry is targeted at women, targeted at their fears, their anxieties. Why are women, I guess, such easy targets for this industry?
You know, I wouldn't say that they're easy targets. They are preyed upon more. But, you know, why women? The whole book's about that.
Yes.
But there's many reasons I'll say, but I'll go into two of them. So to start, if the polls are to be believed, women are more stressed. They, for example, might suffer the second shift, in which they work a full work day and then they take on the majority of the housework or childcare. Others might be struggling without childcare policies or maternal benefits. Or perhaps, you know, they're college girls who are extremely concerned about reproductive rights in our country. The other issue I heard a lot from women I interviewed was a general dissatisfaction with medicine. These are women who are very appreciative of modern medicine, but potentially feel ignored, mistreated, or gaslit by their doctors. Their doctors don't have a lot of time for them. I believe the average is 20 minutes in a doctor's room. And by the way, some physicians I interviewed also expressed criticism. They wish they could spend more time with patients, but the system doesn't incentivize that. And one of the reasons, too, is a lot of women's health is underfunded and under-researched. So you have a lot of people going into the doctor's room, and there's nothing for them. So out of pain or desperation, they'll sort of take their business elsewhere. Now, just because we have issues with modern medicine doesn't mean that alternative medicine or wellness gurus do have the answers. But when you're that desperate, you'll try just about anything, or you'll look for a community where you feel heard, validated, or comforted. And wellness gurus oftentimes take advantage of those vulnerabilities and pain points.
There was a quote that I ran across, I'm paraphrasing here, but that advertisers see women as subject to greater emotionality, having quote unquote inarticulate longing. So from the advertising perspective, perhaps they see women as easy prey.
I think also more the fact that women are just more targeted for other things. For example, like body pressures and having a certain image. So a lot of times you'll see within wellness that it's almost diet culture in disguise. You know, supplements will use words like detox or cleanse, but if you look in between, or if you look at the bottom line, it's really about being thinner or being more attractive. And just women are more subject to that. So it's not that they think women are dumb, they just know that women have a lot more pressures. Or, for example, they take care of the family more. So they have to be concerned about that. So they are preyed upon in that regard. Not all brands, but many brands.
I want to pick up on something you referenced earlier, and you do write about this in the book, about the fact that women, not all women, obviously, but that women feel that this could be a helpful solution to some of their problems, reveals some of the problems that we have in our own country about, I'm thinking about childcare, the fact that there are, you know, food deserts in this country, or we've got, you know, a city in Mississippi that didn't have any water because they, you know, because they had serious infrastructure problems, so that this wellness industry sort of slips in when other parts of our system do not work.
That's right. A lot of this industry is built upon critique, and some of it is quite valid. It's pushing back at times against a disappointing health system, revulsion at pharmaceutical scandals, concerns over the American diet. And I understand that. But sometimes influencers or brands delve into extremes, or they peddle advice that's actually not helpful in the long run.
And is that, go ahead.
Well, one predominant theme is fear-mongering. So it's exaggerating harm or inducing distrust of institutions or cherry-picking studies to claim that everything is toxic. So, you know, that's a way where I understand where that, you know, there's some kernel of truth there. But how helpful is it to make consumers afraid of everything? And what consumers are you leaving out who can't afford these products or can't afford organic food?
Which, of course, is very expensive. What would be an example of the kind of fear-mongering you're talking about?
So I did speak to some dietitians who told me that they were seeing some lower-income groups avoid the produce aisle because they were made afraid of conventional produce because of pesticides on fruits and vegetables. And so they were just going to avoiding that aisle altogether, which is, you know, counterproductive. Because they need fruits and vegetables. They already don't get enough of them. So it's not helpful to make them terrified of it. But at the same time, they couldn't afford organic.
And obviously,
and also, should they be made terrified of it? Should they be made terrified of a conventional apple?
Well, and who's selling that terror?
Well, the people who profit over it.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation. That's Rena Rafael. We're talking about her new book. It's called The Gospel of Wellness, and it's subtitled Gyms, Gurus, Goop, and the False Promise of Self-Care. And we definitely want to hear from you as we are talking about. This is a message and an industry that's largely aimed at women, and you can join our conversation, although of course we want to hear from men as well. You can email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can always pick up the phone and give us a call. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. And much more to talk about this after this very short break, and do stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoe, and we are talking about the wellness industry. It is big business, a multi-trillion dollar industry, touting diets and supplements, skincare, exercise regimens, weekend getaways. And our guest is Rena Rafael, and she's the author of a new book called The Gospel of Wellness, Gyms, Gurus, Goop, and the False Promise of Self-Care. Well, speaking of goop, let me play a clip of Gwyneth Paltrow. She's talking with correspondent Tracy Smith on the CBS Sunday Morning Show, and this is just a month or so ago, September 25th, 2022. Let's give it a listen.
What do you say to people who say that you're promoting pseudoscience? I genuinely don't understand where that comes from, because we don't do that. We've never done that. I mean, especially when we started, there were so many modalities and ways of achieving wellness that had no scientific backing, but that have worked in India for thousands of years or worked in China. So I think it was like a way to take shots at us. But there's nothing that we talk about that's actually that wacky.
So what do you make of Gwyneth Paltrow and Goop?
Yeah, I think that's a way of her evading responsibility. And I think she's a brilliant marketer. And I think she's very charismatic. But time and time again, medical experts and scientists have completely disproven what she just said, which is that she does back products or protocols that have very little, if any, scientific evidence.
And is she just the most successful of these and perhaps the most well-known of these promoters?
I would say she's the most well-known, but, you know, the average person who's interested in wellness or the wellness industry isn't a Goop fan. They're actually a very small part of this industry, but she just makes headlines all the time. And she also doesn't mind being criticized. If anything, I think that she likes being in the news.
Let me read a couple of comments. An email from Elizabeth, who says, I've practiced personal wellness as in yoga, meditation, vegetarian eating, among other things, for the past 40 years, and I'm much healthier than many people in my age group. In this endlessly consumer-oriented society, I think you can buy your way out of anything, but don't blame the industry. Blame your lack of taking responsibility for yourself. Now, Elizabeth packed a lot of that into her comment, but what she's saying, at least at the front half of her comment, is that, look, I've been doing this and I'm healthier than people I know in my age group.
That could be. She could actually have a very, very healthy lifestyle. That's not necessarily available to everyone in America. If you're working two jobs and you have small children, you may not be able to. And so, again, my issue is not with yoga or meditation or any of these practices. It's just, at what point do we set people up for self-blame if they're not able to accomplish these things? For example, I have a chapter in my book called Why is the Advice Always Yoga? You know, whenever anyone is stressed, it's do yoga, do a skincare mask. Well, maybe the issue is that their boss is emailing them after hours. Maybe they don't have any vacation, time off. Maybe they don't have maternal benefits. That's the point of my book, is that we're not looking, I think, at sometimes the root issues of why people feel so unwell, so lonely, or so unsupported.
Well, and I think that there's a lot of blaming that goes on when it comes to things like health. That, you know, if only you did something, then you would be better off, then you would be healthy. I mean, that seems like a kind of a mantra that we hear a lot.
Yeah, a lot of times there's a lot of productivity pressures here that set you up to essentially point, you know, the finger at yourself. But many people aren't given the opportunity. Sometimes it could be genetics. You know, there's a whole bunch of reasons why people are unwell. But my main issue is the fact that so much of this is an individual burden. Instead of communal solutions, systemic solutions, it's all about what you, the individual, can do. And again, I think it's great if people can get movement, can eat nutritious foods. That's wonderful. But it's not available to everyone.
You know, I was reminded of a book I read back in the 60s when I was coming of age, Our Bodies, Ourselves, which was in many ways a self-help book. And it was telling women to take more control of their bodies and themselves. But I wonder how you think that has changed with the advent of social media and TikTok, where these messages just have become so amplified.
Yes, that has given an opportunity for pseudoscience or wellness gurus who are not rooted in scientific evidence to push their wares or their protocols and ideas. And again, the average doctor doesn't have time to be on social media. But it's, again, so enticing for someone who doesn't feel like they're being heard in their doctor's office or who is looking for solutions. You can DM with these influencers or brands. They update several times a day. So that's really, really alluring. So it is in part because of social media, but there are other factors that have gotten people interested in the wellness industry. And again, there's really great things out of the wellness industry. And then all this very specific consumption that I don't think is really rooted in anything that actually really helps people. It's a nice to have, not a must have.
And not a must have. And what about the role of celebrities? I mean, we're talking about Gwyneth Paltrow, but there are a lot of other, you know, either celebrities in their own mind or actual celebrities who play a big role in promoting some of this stuff.
Right. We tend to trust people we already recognize. And so this is why oftentimes you even see pharmaceutical drug ads that feature a celebrity. We'll pay attention, we'll perk up if we see a celebrity. And so it makes sense that they would be sort of the faces of this. And that's oftentimes why you see a lot of celebrities getting into CBD creams or CBD products or supplements, because they know you'll pay attention if you see their name. But that doesn't mean necessarily that that product will help you or is in any way effective.
I was looking at Kourtney Kardashian. This is probably the first time I've ever talked about her on Radio Times. But nonetheless, she's got a new line of vitamins and supplements, and where she talks about, you know, that I've created to become a divine feel-good part of your everyday life. We partnered with the best scientists and doctors to create the cleanest gummy vitamins and supplements using clinically backed ingredients and formulations that help you live your best life. I mean, that's very attractive. It seems like, yes. You know, that could solve some of my problems.
Right. And if you're looking for a solution, you might go and buy it. But, you know, one of the problems with supplements is that just because something is safe to sell on your local Walgreens shelf doesn't necessarily mean that it's effective. Those aren't necessarily tested as to whether they actually work.
Like through the FDA.
But the marketing sounds good.
Indeed, it does. And even the word natural, which is thrown around a lot, how should we understand that word?
Yeah, I see a lot of things called natural, which I always think is kind of fun. You see this with beauty products and a lot of even supplements. And, you know, there are no lipstick trees. There is nothing that you're just grabbing off a tree. So what does natural really mean? But that term natural is so enticing to the average consumer because we love nature and we feel so distant from it. But there are a lot of bad things in nature. There are earthquakes, asbestos, poisonous mushrooms, and also synthetic isn't always bad. Look at vaccines, look at antibiotics. So this appeal to nature fallacy is a big part of the wellness industry. And, you know, so much of my book goes into the marketing linguistics that gets us sucked in and appeals to what we want to be or what we want our lives to be or to our aspirational selves.
Always working on self-improvement.
Exactly. It's self-optimization, or they use coded language to get at something we really want. Let's say to look younger, to look prettier, thinness. There's a bunch of stuff that's coded language.
I don't know whether Botox is considered part of the wellness industry, but I've noticed ads on television when you see the people promoting Botox, they're in their 30s. I mean, they hardly have a line on their face, and yet somehow, you know, they're getting these treatments in order to look even younger.
Yeah, there's a bunch of stuff now that's called self-care, and that term has become just as ambiguous as wellness. It can mean almost anything now. I think at one point I saw a headline saying buying real estate is self-care. Anything can be self-care, right, as long as it makes you feel good. I wouldn't call that real wellness, but if it makes someone feel good, makes someone feel more confident, well, that's great for them, but that's not real health per se.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's Irina Raphael. She's our guest today on Radio Times. We're talking about her brand new book. It's called The Gospel of Wellness, and it's subtitled Gyms, Gurus, Goop, and the False Promise of Self-Care. We've got a lot of people that want to join our conversation. You can do that as well. You can email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. You can always call us, and that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Let me read a couple of more comments. Michelle says, I've been scared away from non-organic produce and stood there in the market very stressed. There's a very big financial component. We don't need to give people extra stress from this. People are already dealing with a lot of stress, especially with the pandemic. Let's talk about, you know, food and organic and non-organic food that you write about a lot in this book about, you know, scaring people away from actually eating things that, I mean, may not be perfectly healthy, but is healthy enough.
From what I learned during my research is that organic is much more about a farming method, and that we shouldn't be scaring consumers that they're going to drop dead if they have conventional produce. That's an exaggeration, of course, but a lot of women that I spoke to, especially moms of young children, are like this listener who has stood in a grocery aisle saying, okay, what's safe here? And that adds a lot of stress to people, not to mention excludes whole groups who can't afford this. And so I would say it's counterproductive and it's not helping women. It's adding more burdens and just more on their to-do lists.
You said there's actually a name for this, and an unhealthy obsession with healthy eating has a medical name, orthorexia.
Yes, that is not necessarily about organic as much as it is eating quote-unquote clean food, so having as least processed food as possible, so generally having fruits, vegetables, unprocessed food. But it can become an obsession for a rare amount of women where they're so terrified over having processed food that they just start excluding more and more food groups until all you can really have is salads. Again, it's very, very rare.
Right.
But the fact that it is happening increasingly more is testament to the fact that sometimes the messaging within this industry is harming more than helping.
You quote also a blogger named Jordan Younger. Now, this goes back to 2014. A successful wellness blogger named Jordan Younger decided to publicly break up with clean eating. She wrote on her blog, she recanted, quote, her, quote, entirely vegan, entirely plant-based, entirely gluten-free, oil-free, refined sugar-free, flour-free, dressing sauce-free diet, going on from there. I mean, under those restrictions, what could she actually eat?
I think she documented how hard it was for her, that she was basically just eating a bunch of carrots and vegetables, and it was very, very difficult. But it's almost to be expected when we demonize certain foods or we make everything into a very strict binary where food is either healthy or unhealthy, instead of looking at overall dietary patterns. So if you terrify the consumer enough that they're going to get sick over having an Oreo, well, then of course they're all that's going to be left to them is vegetables and fruit. Again, it's such a small minority, but these type of ideas where people are made afraid of certain items or having a snack is happening more and more.
Where we sort of lost track of what it is to be a healthy person, to live a healthy life?
I think people know more or less that they should eat their fruits and vegetables and try to get movement. I think people know the basics, try to get enough sleep. The question is, are we able to do it? And maybe we should be looking at our overall systems here in the U.S. or how we live our lifestyles as to why we can't accomplish those things. Or even something like community and social support, which is completely ignored within the wellness industry, probably because you can't download a friend. there's no real money to be made there. But there are so many other things we can do to feel well that we know about. Just maybe we're not able to do it. And how do we get there? That's the question I want to ask. How do we actually live a healthy lifestyle?
But I wonder whether people who do yoga classes or go to gyms or SoulCycle or all those other companies, they're getting their community there.
To some degree, I go into the fact that for many people, that is their way for them to see people and meet new people. But there are sometimes some drawbacks. For example, if your gym is your community, what happens if you lose your job or you get injured? What happens to your community then when it is contingent on your financial ability or your physical ability? That's sometimes the problem that people don't foresee. And I interviewed several people who were shut out of their gym for various reasons, even women who were pregnant who said, in my third trimester, I was kicked out of my community. I need to go find a new gym. That's a problem.
Yeah, or a different community. Let me get Tin Issy. Is that, I hope, yes, Tin Issy to join our conversation. Hi, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marnie. I am a makeup artist and also someone who works in the wellness field. I do a lot of education with brands that claim to be 90% of natural and organic, and like behind the scenes, it all kind of is the same thing of just brands just wanting to market and make profit. I personally am a believer in rituals versus saying self-care, because I think we are now adding the self-care title into into commercial labels versus it actually being ritualistic.
Ritualistic meaning something that you do on a regular basis or do every day?
Exactly. Something that you do on a regular basis that actually makes you feel connected to yourself and not to a product or a system. I think we're losing that self, like that true sense of self in the word self-care.
As you say, you're a makeup artist, and you're saying that once you sort of look beyond the label, it's pretty much all the same?
It's pretty much all the same. It's pretty much just, you know, rubbing creams on your face and massaging powders. And I think that in itself is more so the drug in itself versus it being just, you know, salt, like wellness connected, because I think it's more so just in the act versus what, you know.
Right. Well, Tin, hold on, because I want to give, Rena, go ahead.
Yeah, that is such a good point. And oftentimes what I heard from women that I interviewed was it wasn't so much about what they were doing. It wasn't about the skincare mask or the bubble bath. It was the fact that they were taking time away for themselves. And in that sense, you don't need a fancy skincare mask. You don't need all these accessories. It could just be sitting down with a cup of tea. It could be a whole bunch of things. But you're right. Ritual is so important. And I think it's about just taking time for yourself, whatever it is that you enjoy. But you don't have to buy or do something that this industry tells you to do.
Tennessee, thanks for calling into Radio Times. I'll tell you what, let's take another short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation talking with Rena Raphael about her new book, and it's titled The Gospel of Wellness, and it's subtitled Gyms, Gurus, Goop, and the False Promise of Self-Care. We're talking about a multi-trillion-dollar industry, and we're going to take a very short break. You can join our conversation. You can call us, as Tennessee did, at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. We've got a lot more to talk about after this very short break, so do stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoeng talking with our guest about the wellness industry. Let me play another clip, and this is actually from an article that our guest wrote. TikTok is flooded with health myths. These creators are pushing back. And this is Mustafa Dahir. He's a practicing, or I guess, I'm not sure it's a man or a woman, is a practicing pharmacist medical student who debunks health misinformation on TikTok. Let's give it a listen.
I'm willing to bet that you know at least one girl that's using steroids every single day. That's right, steroids. One in three girls these days are taking the birth control pill. And believe it or not, the birth control pill is actually an analog of the bodybuilding steroid nandrolone, commonly called...
One of the most annoying things when it comes to busting misinformation is that the people who spread the misinformation use hints of truth to spread their lies. This guy is trying to demonize the birth control pill by comparing it to illegal anabolic steroids. Let's first define what a steroid actually is. A steroid is a four-membered ring, like so. 1, 2, 3, 4. What is attached to this four-membered ring will determine how the steroid behaves in the body.
And he goes on from there. Rena, how effective are these debunkers?
I think they're very good. I think it's too early to tell what type of impact they'll have on the industry as a whole or misinformation. One issue is that they're up against an army of influencers who are not based in science. But we are seeing more and more institutions and agencies recognizing the need to get doctors and experts on social media pushing against this tidal wave of misinformation.
Are those trusted messengers?
For the most part, most of them are following their society guidelines. So I think so. They definitely know more than
Gwyneth Paltrow. Oh, wow. I'll say that.
Well, and it's interesting to be having this conversation in the middle of the pandemic when we know there was so much misinformation being promoted and continues to be promoted about vaccines and masks and, you know, all the steps that could actually keep people safe from this virus.
Yes, definitely. I will say that there is some hope moving forward because I think that there was such an emphasis on misinformation and on health during the pandemic that you are seeing more and more Americans sort of want to know what the actual science is, try to seek out experts. So I do see a slight course correction moving forward. That is promising.
That is promising. Let me read a couple of more comments from our listeners. This is Susan who says, I'm 73 years old. I find it very humiliating and degrading that unqualified women like actresses are preying on other women who are not comfortable in their own shoes. This shortchanges women. We have brains. And then she goes on to say, it's almost criminal. It's an interesting perspective of women taking advantage of other women.
Yeah, and I would say a lot of them do it because there's money to be made there. There's no money in moderation. You don't see a lot of these gurus say, hey, just eat a sensible diet and go on a walk and you don't need to spend a lot of money. A lot of them end up hawking something like a supplement or a beauty brand or something that you always need to reach this almost unattainable level of health perfection. You know, it's like you reach one goalpost and then it just keeps moving. So it is insulting. And I don't appreciate when, regardless of gender, when people take advantage of other people that prey on their vulnerabilities or on what they want out of life or what can make their lives easier.
And if we're talking about supplements or natural beauty products, are we talking about a largely unregulated industry?
Well, when we say unregulated, you know, it's illegal to sell something that's unsafe, but right. That's different than selling something that's not effective. Right. And that's the difference. You could be buying something and, you know, nothing is going to happen to you in the sense of, let's say, clean beauty. But is it really, really something that you need for your health? In terms of supplements, sometimes they can harm you if they interact with other drugs and there's complications. So that isn't as harmless per se. But that's sort of the distinction of what's effective versus what might actually harm you.
And how do you suggest people, in a sense, arm themselves or educate themselves so that they don't fall prey to some of these, you know, flim-flam messages?
First and foremost, people should try to examine who they're looking to for advice. Are you following an actress or an influencer who has no credentials? And are they respected throughout their community, or are they potentially an outlier, like some sort of celebrity doctor that no one trusts anymore? This should be someone who is revered and respected within their community. Also, look for manipulative language. Is someone trying to terrify you, or are they speaking to your most aspirational self? Look at how someone twists the language, because if they're trying to stoke a certain emotion, I think that's a red flag. And then third, just, you know, question whether someone has something to gain out of it. You know, are they just trying to make a buck? That should really kind of perk up your ears.
And is the emotion fear? I mean, would that be the one that if something is being sold that's scary, some red flag should go up?
That's one part of it. The other thing I do see a lot within this industry is that, again, it goes back to our aspirational self. It's some product or ritual will say that we'll be thinner, look younger, be respected, or reach our pure selves. And so, that all comes down to selling the mirage of control. You know, buy this, do that, avoid XYZ, and you can manage whatever feels unruly in your life.
Let me read some more comments. Patrick writes, wellness is part of what you do and how you do it. Life itself is about accepting peace, harmony, and enjoying the sunshine while it shines and happiness is within. Candace says, in a world where there is so much external control over women's lives in particular, self-care is something I feel as a woman is the one thing I have total control over. That's a very interesting comment. And the word control is a lot embedded in this industry, but also something that you deconstruct in this book as well.
Right. And again, I think there's a lot to be said about having rituals or having activities that make you feel good or make you feel a certain way. The issue is when we're sold certain things that promise us control over something which we may not ever be able to control, or is just a false promise.
A false promise of happiness or a better life.
Of that you will be healthier, that yes. You will get better, whatever it is. Like I said, anything you want, this industry offers that.
Here's an email from Chris. I was trying so hard to eat healthy that I became very unhealthy. Only organic food, no gluten, no meat, no cheese, etc. I wound up malnourished and deficient in vitamins. My hair was falling out. I lost way too much weight, all while trying to be healthy. And that, of course, Rena, is a potential risk when you really go too far.
Yes, and the same exact thing happened to me. I got disordered eating from clean eating. I was so terrified of everything that I was basically just eating almost baby food. Wow. I was terrified of sugar. I was terrified of dairy. I was afraid of everything that, quote unquote, wasn't natural. And it made me obsessive. It didn't make me healthier. And it occupied so much headspace. Time that I could have spent doing anything else in this world, but I spent hours a day just calculating how much I was exercising and what I was eating and if something was pure or natural enough. I don't think that type of stuff helps women. No. It just burdens them.
Yeah. And was there a moment where you said, I just can't live like this?
Yeah, it got to a breaking point. I think my spouse at a certain point saw me, licking sugar off of snacks and saying, okay, I think this has gone too far. But it took many years of me devoting myself to this protocol and really believing that it'll make me sleep better, it'll make me look younger, it'll give me a certain body size. And it's still taking me time now to unlearn all of that. And it's not easy.
Yeah. I mean, having those voices in your head.
Yeah. But again, from also a professional level, I was a wellness industry reporter. So I got access to all of these brands, their CEOs, their marketing plans. And over time, I just realized how many of these very popular brands were not necessarily rooted in strong science.
Sherry emails, and this is something that I do want to talk with you about. She says, wellness at work is blaming the individual and not really addressing the root cause of the poor work environment in the workplace. All the yoga, meditation, movement, etc. won't make up for a workplace that creates burnout and resentment. So many of us are part of a workplace that aren't employee-centric. And you write in this book about these are big companies that have all sorts of wellness programs, but they expect people to be, you know, on the job for hours on end.
Right. And I actually just have a piece in the LA Times about exactly this topic, that it sets up the individual for self-blame when the root cause might be that they're being overworked or they don't have a workplace that doesn't drive them crazy. They're not getting enough vacation time or they're getting emailed at all hours of the day. So it's not helpful. And, you know, I always say my pet peeve is when a workplace offers you wellness days, days off, but they don't readjust the workload. So you just end up working anyways, but they get to pat themselves on the back and say, oh, we care about work-life balance.
Do you think that's shifting at all, or is that, are we kind of stuck with this?
You know, I wrote this LA Times piece about how we are currently defining self-care is too individualistic and that it is setting people up for self-blame. And I'm amazed at how many comments I get back from people who are saying, we are really starting to dig deeper about what self-care really is and actually questioning our workplaces about what solutions they're offering us. When I go to HR and I say that I am stressed out and I can't deal with the workload, are they actually listening to me or are they saying, oh, well, maybe you should go download a wellness app?
Here's Pat, who writes, your discussion is slowly sounding like reasons not to eat well, exercise, and be connected. Let's hear what might help people. So much good information is out there. People should know where to look. And I'm sorry, Pat, that is coming off, because I think we're talking about the more, I would say, either extreme or consumer-oriented, so that if you want to feel better, then you buy this product. And that's really what we're focusing on, but I want to make sure that you, Rena, get a chance to respond to Pat's comment.
No, of course, I completely agree that we should try as much as we can to try to implement healthier routines, to get movement, to try to eat our fruits and vegetables. Again, it's not always possible for everyone. That is not the point of my book or any of my arguments. I take issue with the more problematic messaging within this industry and how sometimes it can go too far. But I mean, the medical guidelines, of course, say that we should try to implement good things in our lives. So I'm sorry someone took it like that. I think this is just more a discussion of when things get a little too crazy.
I wonder, too, whether you can trace some of this back to the anti-vax movement having to do with mumps, measles, and rubella, and the false claim that it created autism. And there was a lot of pushback on that, from the industry, from the medical industry. But there was, and still is, a community that grew up around this particular message. Do you see this as part of what we're talking about?
Oof, when you get into the anti-vaccine movement, there are so many different reasons why people end up shunning the vaccines. I don't want to get too in-depth in that, but sometimes I do see a lot of the appeal to nature fallacy, where people are made terrified of anything that's synthetic. And again, there's always that little glimmer of truth of where there have been pharmaceutical scandals, where there have been. But, you know, at what point are you potentially harming yourself by shunning this versus not? I don't want to get too into weeds into the vaccine, anti-vaccine movement, but sometimes the wellness industry does pick up these apprehensions and just runs with them and gives counterproductive messaging.
Here's a listener who writes, I'm a hospice spiritual counselor. We support not only patients but loved ones, often spouses and children who have so many responsibilities. I've started to question using the term self-care because that often carries a sense of another item on the to-do list of already exhausted people. I'm starting to ask where and how can you receive care, support, and loving kindness? That's an interesting perspective, and someone who's a hospice counselor is obviously dealing with people in these really difficult moments in their life and oftentimes in their death as well. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, definitely. And I think I also picked up on something in that comment that I feel very strongly about, is that everything comes down to what you, the individual, have to do for yourself. And there's not as much an emphasis on community or communal solutions or even social support. It all comes down to what you have to do. And yes, I do hear a lot of women who tell me even the term self-care makes them feel like, ugh, it's another thing on my to-do list. I have to somehow find an hour and do a face mask. And of course, it doesn't have to be like that. And you don't have to buy a certain thing. But it can add another pressure. And so we have to be very careful of our language. This is not how the term self-care started, but it's since devolved into something that's very productivity pressured.
We're almost out of time here, but Carrie asks, how much of the quest for wellness is really often about women struggling with eating disorders and recasting it as healthy eating for a healthy lifestyle? Can you speak to that? We have about 45 seconds.
It's not always that, but we are sometimes seeing diet culture in disguise. And this is, again, how we get terms like detox and cleanse. So it is a part of it, but not the whole of it. But yes, some women are no longer allowed to use the term diet because it's out of fashion. And so it's couched in the language of be healthy or things of that sort. So it can be part of that, but definitely not all of people who are interested in wellness.
I'm going to squeeze in one more comment. Jan says, I was involved in the original wellness movement. It was all about getting good information to people through actual doctors. And then Jan goes on to say, Goop is not wellness. Well, Rena, Raphael, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. And again, her book is titled The Gospel of Wellness, Gyms, Gurus, Goop, and the False Promise of Self-Care. For many, actually to replay this hour, many more hours, go to WHYY.org and look for Radio Times. Under programs, you can also download a podcast of the show wherever you get your podcasts. Charlie Kyer, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder and Paige Murray Bessler. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you so much for joining us.